All aspects of this conspiracy constitute a gigantic lie. As the people of Russia and China and Czechoslovakia and East Germany and Algeria and Cuba and a score of other countries can so pitifully testify. And as the people of our country will also learn unless the lie can be exposed in time. Not by persuasion do the communists achieve their goals, but by deception and crime and cruelty more massive and more ruthless than mankind has ever faced before. And this horror, my friends, is what we face today, bearing down upon us and closing in from every side. But the American giant still has many times the strength needed to arouse itself, shake loose from this whole smothering process, and to recuperate rapidly from the damage already done. It needs only to be made aware that it is being murdered and that it is not suffering from the inevitably fatal ravages of natural disease. We repeat in plain language for probably the 100th time, all it will take to stop this murder, and the only thing that will stop it, is sufficient understanding on the part of the American people as to what is really taking place. Section 14, which brings us at long last to the role of the John Birch Society in these final stages of a great historic struggle. For we believe not only that these evil forces can still be exposed and stopped and routed, but that the Society and its allies will have to be the decisive factor in bringing this about. We do not see any other group on the horizon today with even the slightest possibility of changing the course of history as it has been projected and supposedly predetermined by the conspiracy. But we do not deceive ourselves or anybody else about our own chances either. We are entirely realistic about both the nature and the size of the task, so that in seeking the added strength which would clearly enable us to win, we think it is our best course to review briefly but frankly what we are, what we have accomplished so far, and what we hope to accomplish in the future. A. The John Birch Society is a completely open and voluntary association. There are no initiation fees, no initiation rights, no special passwords for identification or codes for communication within the society, and no secrets of any kind. The only formal requirement for membership is that you sign an application blank and have it approved by some authorized representative of the society. Also, any member may resign at any time without any formality at all and with only good wishes and goodwill from the officers, the staff, and the other members of the society. The John Birch Society was founded in Indianapolis on December 9, 1958. During the 10 years since then, we have sought to bring into the society only men and women of good character, humane consciences, and religious ideals. For we are striving to set an example by dedication, integrity, and purpose in word and deed, which our children's children may follow without hesitation. Members of the society are of all races, colors, and creeds. We are of all social, economic, and educational levels. We are individualists who disagree among ourselves about many things, but we are firmly united in devotion to those beliefs, principles, and purposes which we do hold in common. For we have voluntarily joined together, one, to combat more effectively the evil forces which now threaten our freedom, our lives, our country, and our civilization. Two, to prevail upon our fellow citizens to start pulling out of the deepening morass of collectivism and then climb up the mountain to higher levels of individual freedom and responsibility than man has ever achieved before. Three, to restore with brighter luster and deeper conviction the faith-inspired morality, the spiritual sense of values, and the ennobling aspirations on which our Western civilization has been built. The long-range objective of the society has been summarized as less government, more responsibility, and a better world. These permanent purposes brought us immediately into conflict with the communists on two levels. On the ideological plane, the communists seek always and everywhere to bring about more government, less individual responsibility, and the abrogation of all morality. And on the plane of action, until the communists can be stopped from completing their subjugation of the whole world, there will be no opportunity for us to move forward at all towards our permanent goals. We have undertaken, therefore, to play a leading role in slowing down, stopping, and eventually routing the communist conspiracy. We realize that the one thing no conspiracy can withstand is the light of day on its activities. The only danger to their gigantic conspiracy which the communists fear is exposure. For this reason, we do all that we can to bring to our fellow citizens more knowledge and a better understanding of the methods, the progress, and the menace of the communist machine. In this undertaking, we have become a new form of opposition to the communists, which they have never faced before in any of the vast areas they have already taken over. So let's look now, again, very briefly, at some of the inadequate but encouraging measures of our success. B. Among these accomplishments of the past 10 years, we might clearly list the following. 1. We have created a new form of opposition to the communists, which they have never faced before in any of the vast areas they have already taken over. This is an organized and sizable army of patriotic citizens with a paid and professional field staff determined to stop the communists by adherence to one single-minded course of action, which has been expressed in this sentence: education is our total strategy, and truth is our only weapon. It is our undertaking to sharpen the weapon of truth and sweep it across the land. 2. When the John Birch Society was formed in 1958, there was very little literature readily available for our purpose. The comparatively few honest and authoritative books which had been written on the subject had in general either been refused publication or completely smothered by the left after one small printing. We have rescued some 24 of the best of those books from oblivion through inexpensive reprints of which millions of copies have been sold. We have ourselves been the original publishers of some 24 new books exposing various aspects and activities of the conspiracy, which have had a correspondingly wide distribution. And we have brought out a veritable flood of pamphlets, now running to more than 200 titles, dealing with almost every phase and stage of the communist program. 3, we have established a monthly magazine, American Opinion, as the most authoritative in the world on what the communists are really doing on all fronts to advance their tyranny. More recently, we've established a weekly magazine, The Review of the News, which is already becoming increasingly important as the one dependable and badly needed source of objective news reporting while the news is still current. 4, because the commercial book channels of America were almost completely closed to anti-communist books, we have been obliged to create our own means and outlets of distribution. These now include over 450 reading rooms that sell books scattered across the country, which sell not only our materials, but those of 100 other publishers. Very important new books on the communist menace are now being brought out by quite a number of these publishers in what adds up to a steady stream. Today, there is a vast and growing literature of reliable information on every facet of the conspiracy, and we can certainly claim credit for a major role in bringing about this encouraging development. We have established a speakers bureau, which, measured by the number of engagements filled, is probably the largest in the world. There are about 100 speakers on our active roster. But what is more important for total effectiveness, about a score of these speakers, ably qualified to describe the danger and horror of communism from sound knowledge or first-hand experience, are constantly making regular tours with 25 to 75 engagements before paying public audiences on that many consecutive nights. And in their free daily appearances on these same tours, before high school assemblies, service clubs, other organized groups, and over local radio and television stations, they multiply the total audience which they reach manyfold, with a cumulative educational impact that is tremendous and far-reaching. 6, we have set up thousands of ad hoc committees, consisting about 90% of patriotic citizens who are not even Birchers, each of which committees is engaged in multiple efforts to inform and alarm the public in its region or community about some particular part of the communist program. Chief among these groups, scattered all over the United States, are our Support Your Local Police committees, our TAC committees, which spread the truth about civil turmoil, our train committees, which hammer away at the need to restore American independence now, and the motoried committees of our movement to restore decency, which have been springing up with immense enthusiasm during 1969. 7, our specific educational accomplishments of most importance so far through all of these labor's programs and facilities include the following. A, we have awakened millions of Americans to the size, nature, and purpose of the communist efforts to undermine the morale, the authority, and the effectiveness of our local police forces. B, we have brought hundreds of thousands of our fellow citizens to realize what the Supreme Court was doing to destroy our Constitution, to rewrite our laws, and to make the path far easier for communists and other criminals. C, we have not been content simply to oppose the advance of the ideology of collectivism, but have hammered away ever since we started at the existence and the menace of the conspiracy. Today, various polls indicate that 80% of the American people believe the communists are influencing our elections to an alarming extent, and that over 50% believe the communists to be behind the riots on our college campuses. These are degrees of ad hoc awareness which would have been fantastic 10 years ago. And for this partial awakening in some areas, we can certainly claim some of the credit. D. We have, we believe, done more to show the communist plans and hands behind the so-called civil rights movement than all other groups in America put together. Through books, pamphlets, films, film strips, and speakers, we have worked incessantly on this problem since the society was founded. The activities of our members have been directly responsible for saving several cities from rioting that was already planned, and for creating a far greater general understanding of this important segment of the communist strategy than would otherwise have been possible. E. We have exposed the communist connections and purposes of the so-called war on poverty to such an extent that in some few areas, the opposition led by our members has even compelled the OEO to withdraw its agencies from those areas altogether. These were only straws in the wind, but the wind is rising. F. While other groups opposed to American foreign aid have been going out of business, our fight against the vast treasonous help by our government to our communist enemies is just now getting a solid footing and gaining in momentum. Our fifth progress report on our petition drive against economic and military aid to communist regimes shows nearly 1.5 million signatures on petitions which have already been delivered to members of Congress, and we expect this drive to become steadily more impressive until such aid is finally discontinued. G. In January 1969, we entered into the fight against sex education in the schools. Since then, our nationwide organization and staff have made tremendous contributions to public understanding of what this pornographic fraud is all about and how it is intended to serve communist purposes. We believe that our help will be decisive in getting such corruptive materials, teaching, and practices out of our schools, and even more important, that our whole movement to restore decency is going to become a powerful and constructive force on the American scene. It is our belief that education is the effective means and political action only the mechanics for bringing about changes in government. It is worthwhile for us to glance at least briefly, therefore, at some political results that have clearly followed on the heels of our educational efforts. But we'll confine this look to just three illustrations. First was the overwhelming defeat in 1966 of Mayor Lindsay's referendum for a civilian police review board in New York City. For Lindsay and the left-wing machine had gone all out on this issue with full confidence in their success. Yet not only did they fail, but this resounding failure marked the end for all practical purposes of the whole nationwide drive for civilian police review boards, and the part played by the John Birch Society in bringing this about through the educational work of its Support Your Local Police Committees and of our members themselves was well known at the time. The second victory was in stopping Abe Fortas in 1968 from being made Chief Justice of the United States and in eventually driving him off the Supreme Court altogether. There were many people who had a hand in that effort in many ways, both behind the scenes and in the direct opposition to Fortas. The letter-writing campaign put on by our members and by many other groups and individuals certainly played an important part. But Walter Ruther's Cope and most of the liberal press blamed this, quote, catastrophe, unquote, on the long educational job of the John Birch Society through its Impeach Warren campaign in creating widespread public distrust of the Supreme Court and its activities. This distrust was amply justified, and a far wider and deeper understanding of what the Supreme Court has been doing to destroy our republic is badly needed. We do take some pride, however, in the progress we have made. But the outstanding example, the most encouraging thing that has happened during the life of the John Birch Society, and in our opinion, the most significant defeat the communists have suffered in the United States in over 40 years, was the sharp victory of Yorty over Bradley in the 1969 election for mayor of Los Angeles. For this election was of immense importance to the communists and the whole super liberal pack. They were willing to use every dirty tactic and ruthless maneuver in the book on behalf of their man, Tom Bradley, a Negro member of the city council. And they were determined to have him win at all costs. By they, we mean the communists and their allies throughout the United States and not just in California. And we do mean at all costs, too. The highly respected local broadcaster, George Putnam, just about the only conservative with any sizable following now left on the air in Los Angeles, stated that Bradley's campaign had cost $7 million, which was poured into Los Angeles from all over the country. They not only sent in oceans of money from the outside, they also sent in left-wing politicians and businessmen of national reputation to overwhelm the opposition in this campaign for the mayor's job in just one American city. These active big-name backers of Bradley included Senator Percy of Illinois, Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts, Senator Jacob Javits of New York, former Senator Thomas Kickle of California, Leonard Firestone, and others. And the Los Angeles Times led the pack in the mass communications field in going all out for Bradley's election. For this was to be not only a sharp and decisive reversal of the trend back towards political conservatism which has been taking place in California, but an almost fatal blow to the morale of the anti-communists everywhere. If Bradley had won, you would have seen headlines in every city in the United States screaming about its significance. For not only would the newly elected mayor of one of America's largest cities have been a militant Negro racist, but a man whose communist affiliations and sympathies were well known. And of course, they expected to win. The polls were announcing Bradley's victory as certain, well in advance. Even most of the conservatives in Southern California itself were frankly and sadly confessing their private opinions that Bradley would win right up to the election. It was obviously because of this confidence that the Los Angeles Times went all out in support of Bradley and thus disclosed where it really stood more clearly than it had ever done before. But the polls and the press turned out to be wrong, which proves that the conservatives should have more confidence. Among other extremely serious matters at stake was the control of the police force of the city. Just as it was in the defeat of John Lindsay for the Republican nomination for mayor in New York City that occurred shortly thereafter, both campaigns demonstrated the tremendous value and effectiveness of our drive over many years for public support of our local police forces. But it was the outcome of this election for mayor of Los Angeles which showed far more clearly than anything else since the John Birch Society was formed the beneficial results of what our members and our ad hoc committees have been doing in their tireless educational labors. For it was the slowly growing understanding of the communist conspiracy, of how the communists work, of the nature of their propaganda, and of their real purposes which made possible the defeat of Thomas Bradley. In the actual campaign itself, the policemen of Los Angeles and the firemen did a tremendous amount of hard work in every precinct. So did individual Birchers, acting, like any other good citizens, entirely on their own. This was of great importance and undoubtedly was the decisive factor in the election. But without the understanding of the picture that had been created by the steady educational work of the Birch members, the Birch chapters, the Birch staff, and the Birch committees over the last few years, there would not have been any such determined drive of resistance to the communist steamroller, and the public would not have been nearly as receptive to what these precinct workers had to say. So let us repeat here, with all the emphasis we can convey, the guiding principle in our total program. Education is the means of bringing about changes in government or in political thinking, and political action itself is only the mechanics for reaping the benefit of that education. We could continue this review for several pages and list a great many other but lesser victories, both in our educational campaigns and in political results. But this is not the time or place to do so. For the sad truth, my friends, is that we have not been able to do nearly enough. Above all else, we are realists in this struggle and about the size of the job we have undertaken. And up to this point, ours has not been very much more than a successful pilot operation, showing what can be done. But through all the smears and obstacles, we have kept our eyes steadily on the levels of size and resources and organization and activities, which we feel would enable us to create the sufficiently widespread understanding needed for victory. So let us outline these plans as concisely as we can. See, what we are asking of you good people who will be hearing this presentation is to come on in and help us to reach the following goals. 1, we need a fully paid member of our field staff in every congressional district, plus an appropriate number of supervisors. This would mean approximately 500 men in the field altogether. Even though the John Birch Society itself never supports or endorses any political candidate and never takes any part or position in political campaigns, we are using congressional districts as measuring units in this and the following paragraphs for two reasons. First, they are reasonably uniform in population, which states, cities, counties, or other geographical divisions are not. And second, because this suggests at once the ultimate underlying support which our educational campaigns might provide for conservative candidates of any or all parties in the political field. 2, we need an average of 1,000 members in every congressional district. This would mean a total of a little over 400,000 members altogether. with the now increasing awareness of good Americans everywhere that something is surely wrong, this total of just the kind of highly respected and responsible numbers that we want could rapidly be acquired if we could afford the field staff first. 3, we need an average of 50 ad hoc committees, TAC, train, support your local police, motor read, and others in every congressional district. This would mean a little over 20,000 ad hoc committees in the United States as a whole. And all it would take to reach this goal is simply sufficient staff to put these committees together and to give them reasonable supervision and guidance. They are just waiting to be formed. 4, we need an adequate number of fully qualified speakers, films, and film strips to take full advantage of the audiences and opportunities that can be provided by these ad hoc committees. This requires only a direct and straightforward expansion, about fivefold, of activities in which we are already successfully engaged and have had plenty of experience. And again, it should be remembered that for every 100 people these speakers reach in their nightly paying audiences, they average to reach at least 1,000 in their free daily appearances in the same areas before high school assemblies and service clubs and other organized groups and over local radio and television stations. 5, we need an average of 4 American Opinion libraries in each district, or a total of about 2,000 throughout the 50 states. They will serve not only as bookstores, but also increasingly as physical headquarters for meetings, film showings, and other activities of conservatives within their respective areas. 6, we need to continue and increase our book publishing activities. The demand just for books of history alone, which tell the truth about many important events of the past 200 years, is going to increase enormously with and contribute solidly to a growing understanding of the conspiracy. 7, we need a paid circulation for American Opinion of 200,000 copies, with a corresponding growth in the number and impact of its reprints. We also need a huge increase in the circulation of the Review of the News, but in this case, we cannot estimate the desirable level. We have never taken our eyes off these goals, my friends, and they not only can be reached, but they must be reached. For to the best of our actual knowledge and honest belief, there simply is no other way and no other chance of saving our country from the horror that now looms so near at hand. D. And now by this time it should be clear that the John Birch Society is no ephemeral organization of loose ties and uncertain loyalties. We are not going through a lot of pretty motions, but are building very solidly for decades to come. And we mean business every step of the way. So in conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, let me point out that if and when you join the John Birch Society, and while you are a member, we are a demanding organization. We expect, and goodness knows we receive, far more work and dedication and far more sacrifice of other interests on the part of our members than you are likely ever to have given or thought of giving to any other organization outside of your church. Because we are looking for pullers at the oars and not passengers in the boat. And you do not deserve a place among what is truly the finest body of men and women in the world unless you are willing to do your share according to your circumstances and your ability. We have established fundamental and permanent objectives, much broader than the fight against the communist conspiracy, because we are convinced that the ultimate long-range objectives are more important than the defeat of the communist conspiracy, but also because we are utterly convinced that we cannot stop the communists unless our efforts are a part of such a broader and more constructive purpose. Yet it is the grip of the communist conspiracy which engages our attention so urgently today. Stopping the communists and destroying their conspiracy, or at least breaking its grip on our government and shattering its power within the United States, not only must occupy the most important spot in all of our thinking, it is the driving danger which should determine our thoughts today about almost everything else, and most of our actions too, for the foreseeable future. For unless we can win that battle, the war for a better world will again be carried on through long and futile dark ages. After we have been killed, our children have been enslaved, and all that we value has been destroyed. This is not rhetoric, and it is not exaggeration. It is a plain statement of the stark danger that is rapidly closing in on us right now. And we ask you in all sincerity, ladies and gentlemen, if the John Birch Society does not play the leading role in stopping the communists, just who is there to do so? The communists pretend to believe, and some of them undoubtedly do believe, that communism is the wave of the future. We believe instead that the whole world is now tired of so much strife and bestiality, treason and immorality, cruelty and confusion, blasphemy and destructiveness, bitterness and fear, doubt and despair that always go hand in hand with communism. We believe that mankind may be about ready to arise, shake off this communist tyranny and terror, and move forward again towards a more enlightened and humane existence. We are doing everything in our power, by all honorable means, to create the understanding that will produce this result. If you have what it takes, in character and in courage, then by all means join us now in our epic undertaking, with the added effort of people like yourself, and with God's help, when and because we have deserved it, we shall break up this immense criminal conspiracy and return a world gone crazy to sanity once again.